You're listening to an After Dinner Conversation magazine podcast. After Dinner Conversation believes humanity is improved by ethics and morals grounded in philosophical truth, and that truth is discovered through intentional reflection and respectful debate. In order to facilitate this process, we have created a growing series of print books, a monthly short story magazine, and two different podcasts. This podcast, Philosophy Ethics Short Story Audiobooks, provides readings of stories that have appeared in our magazine, and we discuss them in our companion podcast, Philosophy Ethics Short Story Discussions. We hope you'll continue the discussion with friends, family, and students, or head over to the comments section on our website or Facebook page. And please subscribe to our podcast, share it on social media, and suggest it to friends. Thank you for supporting us through your magazine subscriptions and through patreon.com. Links are in the description. I'm Tina Forsey, an acquisition editor at After Dinner Conversation. This story was written by Fiona Ennis and was published in our August 2021 magazine. Claim. In the tiny room that's used as a staff canteen in Halden Insurance, you take two Ryvita out for your lunch, snap one in half, then put the bigger half back in your lunchbox. Maura licks the egg mayonnaise that's spilling out of her sandwich as she watches you slice a tomato. She'll probably make some comment about you being too thin again. Her dark blonde fringe, sprayed to the last, stands up straight over her forehead, and you can see where the teeth of the comb were pulled through the strands. The rest of her hair is backcombed. She thinks she looks like one of the Bangles or something. The last time she gave you a lift home when it was raining, she played Manic Monday and then fast-forwarded the tape to Walk Like an Egyptian, doing the hand actions when she stopped at the traffic lights. Sean, your boss, asked her last week to tone down the hair a bit. Look more professional when she's talking to clients. Not that her hair bothered him as such, he'd said, but she had to think of the company image. Most days, she slicks her hair back with that wet-look gel, but not today, as she's heading out for drinks after work. Not that he'll say anything. She'll probably end up in Club Tempo after. It's free in for women on Thursdays. Ladies' night. She'll be dying in the morning again. The kettle shudders on the countertop and clicks just as Sean walks in. His jacket is hanging off him. You don't know why he always carries a copy of the Irish Times to the canteen each day. He never ends up reading it. He nods at you. The usual? Yep, thanks. He puts a teaspoon of coffee into the red mug and another into his special mug. Maura points a frosted pink nail at your plate. Don't know how you can be full on 1.5 Ryvita. Still, it's a quarter more than you had yesterday, isn't it, Neve? And Sean, since you're asking, I'll have a cup of two. He opens the box of tea and throws a bag in the yellow mug with the chip off the side.
Sure. That's why she's so lovely and thin, isn't it?
Maura raises her tadpole eyebrows. He smiles at you, and his eyes graze over your legs. You pull at your pencil skirt a bit. Then he says,
Did you know Greta Garbo used to insure her legs for millions?
Maura puts down the crust of her sandwich and takes out a penguin bar.
Yeah, I heard Tina Turner does that. Don't know if it's true. Imagine if we got a call from someone around here asking for that.
He brings over the coffee. When Maura looks at him, he goes back for her tea. As he sits down beside you, you move your chair and say, Imagine the actuaries working out that one. He laughs.
I don't think the premiums would be too high somehow.
Maura is in the bathroom, fixing up her makeup before she hits the pub. The office phone rings. It's 10 to 5. Typical. This had better not hold you up. Your stomach is growling, and you have to do your aerobics video before dinner. You say,
Hello, Halden Insurance. Neve speaking. How may I help you?
A woman's voice says, Neve, glad I got you before closing. It's Margaret, the bishop's secretary.
What can I do for you, Margaret?
The diocese is a huge account. This could take ages.
Well, we're trying to insure against all sorts of risks. There are a lot of people against the church these days.
Dreadful, isn't it? You're glad she doesn't know you voted in favor of legalizing divorce last year. Not that the referendum passed. Sean had told Maura not to be attending those pro-divorce protests in town, in case it got back. He doesn't know she headed off on the bus to that rally in Dublin, bringing all the flyers with her that she'd copied on the office machine. Margaret's voice is barely loud enough to hear. People are making all sorts of allegations against a few of the priests. Imagine after they've given up their lives for the church. We'll have to take out some unusual cover in the interests of the diocese and the priest too, of course.
Right. What kind of policy, Margaret? Your shoe is chafing your right heel, and you slip your shoe off and dangle it from your toes.
One that protects the diocese against liability arising from sexual abuse of children by priests?
Excuse me? Your shoe falls to the floor.
Is there a problem?
No, of course not. You knock on Sean's office door. It's after 5, but he always works late.
Come in.
He's sitting at his desk and smiles when you enter.
Shouldn't you have gone home by now? I'm working you too hard.
Pay rise?
He lets out a breath through his teeth.
Yeah, right. Feels like the economy is never going to pick up.
I need to talk to you about something. He indicates for you to take a seat, then sits back in his chair and rakes his fingers through his hair. You sit and pull your skirt over your knees.
I just got a call from Margaret. The bishop's secretary?
Oh, yeah?
How are you going to put this?
She was inquiring about a policy to ensure the diocese against liability for sexual abuse of children by priests.
What's that now?
He sits forward and puts his hands on the desk. A policy to protect against liability for sex abuse of children by priests.
Right.
He rubs his forehead.
So what do we do?
Do?
Like report it?
He taps his pen on the desk, then stares at it for a moment.
No, we won't be doing that.
They could be near kids.
Neve, we protect against liability. Just because we insure a house against fire doesn't mean the house will go on fire. This is just protection in case claims are made. Insurance 101.
You don't believe that.
I do. Anyway, this is confidential. You're not to mention it to anyone.
He cannot be serious. He says, I mean it, Neve.
I have to.
His neck is mottled.
You can't cast aspersions on people's characters, least of all on our clients. You'd better keep it to yourself.
Then he opens a desk drawer.
I have a stack of CVs here from girls just like you. You'd have no prospects on the dole queue. You know yourself, factories are closing up and down the country.
You watch as he closes the drawer. It feels like it happens so slowly. Then he looks at you, like really looks at you.
Neve, I don't want to lose you. Just do the paperwork tomorrow. There's a good girl. But keep any documents relating to it out of Maura's sight. You know what she's like.
You get up from the chair and close the door behind you. After the 40-minute walk home from work, you let yourself into your bed sit. You hate waking up in the same room as your fridge and TV, and the rent is pretty high considering the flowery wallpaper is peeling and the carpet is lifting away from the skirting board. A loud grumble comes from your stomach, but you've always been like that, wanting to eat because something's eating you. You preheat the oven, change into your t-shirt and tracksuit pants, and rewind your Jane Fonda video. This should take your mind off things. By the time the video is over, your dinner should be ready. You take a Lean Cuisine sweet and sour chicken out of the freezer. At least you don't need a microwave for this flavor, or for the chicken fried rice one, even though the rice sometimes gets hard in the oven and tastes like little pellets. Still, at least you know what's in them. 300 calories. So 2/3 of it today equals 200 calories. You've learned not to leave the third you don't want on your plate. Well, it's not that you don't want it, but you always put it in the bin before you even sit down. You peel off the film, pop it out of the container, and put it in the oven. Then you move the tiny table and chair nearer your bed so you can do your workout. You do your waist whittlers, and even though you're sweating and trying to concentrate on the exercises, you keep replaying that conversation with Sean. Maura would have stood up to him, and she would have done something already. Why are you so useless, utterly useless? You put your mat on the carpet to do your inner thigh exercises. You hate these. You do two, then you stop doing them and just lie there, even though Jane is being really encouraging on the TV. You stare at the big brown stain on the ceiling, just near the light, then get up and turn off the video, not even noting where you were on the tape. You've never stopped it partway through before. When your dinner is ready, you sit down. Don't even bother scraping off the third you don't usually eat. You plow through it, rather than your usual slow mouthfuls. And when you've finished, you can feel it just sit there. You go into your bathroom, bend over the toilet bowl, and retch. It's been a long time since you've done this. You've been so good at not doing it. So good at controlling everything that goes in, so that you don't have to do this anymore. But your body remembers what to do. You don't even need to stick two fingers in your throat like you used to when you started doing this back when you were 12. The food just comes up your throat and plops out. The curry, mixed with acid, burning your throat. Lumps of chicken come up too. Grains of rice float in the bottom of the bowl. When no more will come up, you sit on the lino in front of the sink, crying, your arms around your legs. Not this again. You've been so good for so long, you can't go back to this. Every day while you sat on the primary school bus, staring at the fields go by, Leanne from your class would get on to you again about being fat, calling you Titanic and stuff. And who was she to talk, as if she had a perfect body or something? The last time she fell out with her two best friends, Nisa and Kara, they told everyone she stuffed her bra with tissues. Not that they were all that either. Kara had one blue eye and one brown eye, and Nisa's hair was always greasy. They weren't too bad to you, though. Didn't really call you names. But they laughed along with Leanne just the same. The day before you'd started making yourself sick after eating, Leanne had sat behind you on the bus and called you names, while you'd stared at the gloop in the corner of the black rubber around the window. David Nolan, who you had fancied all year, wasn't in the back seat where he usually sat. You'd got a seat near the front and David had sat opposite and smiled at you. You hadn't imagined that. He'd been looking at you in class for the past few weeks, but on the bus that day, when Leanne started calling you fatso really loudly, he'd got up and walked to the back seat to the rest of the cool sixth class crowd who'd picked old cigarette butts off the ground that were there from the town runs and smoked them. Your cheeks were burning. You didn't want to go on like this anymore, wearing an enormous skirt with an elasticized waist. Your mom was always on you about your weight, and even your auntie, who usually nudged her to stop, kept telling you how she had lost loads of weight by walking every day. So you decided to get off the bus early and walk a good part of the way home. Alan, the bus driver, could drop you at the sign that said 3 miles to your townland. That would be a good start. Your stop was the last one on the journey home every day. Leanne's stop was the second last, and her house looked run down. Her mom had run off with someone. Everyone knew that, even though she said her mom was modeling in Paris. Every day for the last part of the journey, when everyone except you and Leanne had left the bus, Alan, the driver, asked her to sit in the front seat and chat to him. He was in his 30s, which seemed ancient back then. He was always kind to you, though. When you reached the sign for your townland, before he'd called Leanne up to talk to him, you'd said, "Can you let me off here?" He'd said, "Why?" "I want the exercise."
"Won't your mom be worried about you?"
"She won't be home until 5:30 anyway." He'd stop the bus and open the door. "Pop out, so. And Neve, don't let that name calling get to you. They're only jealous because you've got a pretty face." You'd looked at your feet as you'd walked down the steps. "Thanks." The bus had lurched forward and drove out the road where there were no houses for ages. You'd adjusted your school bag on your back. It was a pity you hadn't had PE that day. You would have had your runners with you instead of your hard patent shoes. The next morning, when you got off the bus, Nisa and Kara stopped you. Leanne was standing over by the school gate. They nodded at you to wait with them until everyone else had gone. Class wouldn't start for another 15 minutes. Nisa said, "We need you to come with us to Miss Crawford and tell her what that bus driver has been doing." You put your school bag on the ground for a minute. Your shoulder still hurt from carrying it the day before. "What do you mean?"
"Leanne says he's always looking at her and getting her to come up and talk to him after everyone has gone. Yesterday, after you got off the bus early, he did stuff to her."
"What kind of stuff?"
Nisa moved a bit nearer. "He was touching her."
You looked over at Leanne, leaning against the gate. "She's lying."
Kara said, "What?"
"He's never called her up to talk to him, and I didn't get off the bus early. Why would I do that?"
Nisa pushed her fringe back from her face. "Why would she lie?"
"She stuffs her bra with tissues. And she said her mom is a model in Paris. How can you believe a word she says?"
They looked over at her, then at each other. Nisa said, "Glad we talked to you. We could have gotten a heap of trouble over this."
Then she walked up to Leanne and kicked some gravel at her.
"You're a dirty liar."
That evening, even though you'd brought your runners with you, you didn't get off the bus early to walk home. But after everyone else had gone, you watched how Alan looked at Leanne in the mirror and felt guilt wriggle its way through you and take hold. That evening, after your mom served you chicken and veg, you went to the bathroom and put your fingers down your throat. It's after lunch, and Maura has perked up a bit. She was hungover all morning and put her head down on her desk a few times, but after a tato sandwich and some Fanta, she's coming back to herself. Sean's door is closed, but she keeps her voice low.
"I'm never drinking again. I mean it this time."
You say, "Yeah, right."
"Anyway, what's up with himself? He barely said a word at lunchtime. Not that I'm complaining."
"Dunno." You finished working on the policy for Margaret, and the documents are in an envelope on your desk, ready to post. But you can't bring yourself to seal the envelope. Maura looks at you.
"You're very quiet today. Why'd you stay on after I left at 5? You're usually out of here like a hot snot."
"Just had to talk to him about something." She comes over.
"Hope he didn't try it on. I've seen the way he gops at you. I'm here if you want to tell me anything."
You look at her for what feels like a whole minute. Then you pick up the envelope containing the policy and feel your fingers draw out the documents.
"I mean it," she says. "I can stand up to him."
You slide the documents back in and put the envelope down. "No, everything's okay, Maura."
"You don't look like it is."
"Don't worry, I'm fine. Thanks, though."
"If you're sure."
She goes back to her desk.
"I could do with some air. I'm off to post some documents. Have you got anything to go there?"
"Yep." You seal the envelope, hand it to her, and she walks out the door. You almost run after her, but instead you go to the bathroom, pressing your forehead against the door. Then you lean over the toilet, and when you vomit, only a small piece of Ryvita comes up. It won't flush away. Discussion questions. 1. If you worked for an insurance company, would you be willing to insure a diocese against sexual abuse allegations? Are there some things you shouldn't be able to buy insurance against? 2. The narrator lied for the bus driver because she knew it would hurt the story of her school bully. Given the various factors, how do you judge the narrator for her actions? 3. The narrator's boss implies he would fire her for the ethical issues she has against insuring the church against sexual abuse charges. What, if anything, should the narrator have done in response to the threat, and why?
4. What exactly are the mental health issues the narrator has? And what would be the best steps or realizations for her to move forward to being a healthier individual? 5. Are there any additional questions you would want to ask before issuing sexual assault insurance for the church? What answers would permit or preclude you from issuing the insurance? What do you think? Let's continue the discussion on our companion podcast, After Dinner Conversation Discussions, and in the comments section on our website or on Facebook. Links are in the description. Thank you for joining us, and we hope to hear from you soon.